Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
I mean, I look at what you do. You walk in and you just say, you want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say, that's okay, you're all gone. You're all gone.
United Auto Workers files federal labor charges against Donald Trump and Elon Musk, accusing them of illegally threatening to fire striking workers during their discussion on Musk's social media platform X. We'll speak with Wall Street Journal reporter Dana Mattioli about how Musk broke with the Democrats to support Trump and is now spending tens of millions of dollars on his run for the presidency. Then the prominent Bethlehem Palestinian pastor, Reverend Munther Isaac.
A genocide has been normalized. And as people of faith, if we truly claim to follow a crucified Savior, we can never be okay with this. We should never accept the normalization of a genocide.
The Reverend Munther Isaac is here in New York speaking tonight at the historic Riverside Church. His address, silence is complicity. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's military has issued new evacuation orders for tens of thousands of Palestinians sheltering in Khan Yunis. The latest mass displacement order came as the United Nations warned 84% of the Gaza Strip is under evacuation orders issued by the Israeli army. Earlier today, Israeli assaults across Gaza killed at least 20 Palestinians. This comes as Haaretz is reporting the Israeli army has forced Palestinian civilians to inspect potentially booby-trapped tunnels in Gaza. The use of human shields is forbidden under the Geneva Conventions. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed four Palestinians in an airstrike on the town of Tamun earlier today. Soldiers were filmed seizing the corpses, part of an Israeli military practice of withholding the bodies of Palestinians it kills. A fifth Palestinian was killed during an early morning Israeli raid on the town of Tubas. The UN's humanitarian agency has warned Israel's attack on a UN-run school in Gaza City that killed at least 100 people Saturday was far from an isolated incident. The UN reports it's at least the 21st Israeli strike on a school since early July that have killed scores of civilians, including children. On Tuesday, Algeria called an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council to discuss Israeli attacks on civilians. Riyad Mansour is Palestine's UN ambassador.
As the genocide continues, you have a responsibility to react, to save human lives and preserve the foundations for peace and security for all, not just for some. Israel is a rogue state with a rotten government due to the unbridled impunity it has enjoyed so far.
The United States has approved $20 billion in additional weapons sales to Israel, despite federal laws that prohibit arms transfers to military units accused of gross human rights violations. The State Department's approval of the sales came just a day after Secretary of State Antony Blinken commemorated the 75th anniversary of the signing of the Geneva Conventions with a call to respect international humanitarian law. Michigan Congressmember Rashida Tlaib, who's Palestinian-American, wrote in reply, quote, "You supported sending more U.S.-made bombs being used to commit war crimes. The government of Israel bombed hospitals, schools, and tents full of displaced Palestinians. How can you say you are for respecting international human rights laws?" Tlaib asked. Peace negotiations aimed at ending Sudan's 16-month war are expected to begin in Geneva today, despite the Sudanese army's refusal to attend the talks mediated by the United States. Sudanese army officials said they would not show up, accusing the Rapid Support Forces of violating an agreement between the warring parties brokered in Saudi Arabia last year, and also criticized the presence of the United Arab Emirates, which it accuses of backing the RSF, as one of the observers in the Geneva negotiations. This comes as the International Organization for Migration warns Sudan is at a breaking point as famine has worsened an already catastrophic displacement crisis. Massive floods across Sudan since June have also compounded the mass displacement. The IOM has called on an urgent global response to the situation in Sudan and increased access to humanitarian aid to prevent tens of thousands of more deaths in the coming months. A second region of Russia has declared a state of emergency after Ukrainian forces pushed deeper into Russian territory in a surprise offensive. The governor of Russia's Belgorod region says Ukrainian drone and artillery attacks have destroyed homes and killed civilians, adding to attacks in Russia's Kursk region that began last week. Almost 200,000 Russians have fled their homes. Meanwhile, the government of Poland says it's been unable to execute an arrest warrant issued by Germany for a suspect in the 2022 sabotage of the Nord Stream pipelines, which were built to carry natural gas from Russia to Europe. The pipelines were severely damaged in a series of underwater explosions in the Baltic Sea that the United States initially blamed on Russia. A 44-year-old Ukrainian diving professional identified as Volodymyr Z is alleged to have attached explosive charges to the pipelines with two other Ukrainian nationals. Polish authorities say the suspect fled to Ukraine in July. Bangladeshi authorities have opened a murder investigation into the possible role of ousted Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina in the police killing of a grocery store owner during mass student-led protests in July. Hasina resigned earlier this month and fled to India. The murder complaint is the first legal case filed against Hasina's deadly crackdown on the weeks-long protests in which Bangladeshi armed forces killed at least 300 protesters, including children, according to the UN. To see our coverage of Bangladesh, go to democracynow.org. Thailand's constitutional court has removed the prime minister, Srettha Thevisin, from office, ruling he violated the constitution by appointing a minister to his government who had a criminal conviction and served 6 months in jail in 2008. The move has plunged Thailand into new political turmoil and comes just days after the same court dissolved the Progressive Move Forward opposition party. Thevisin's removal after less than a year in power means that Thai parliament must now convene to form a new government. Thevisin, a real estate tycoon, is the fourth time prime minister in 16 years to be removed by the constitutional court. The Africa Centers for Disease Control has declared a public health emergency as a virulent strain of Mpox spreads rapidly across Central Africa. So far this year, the Africa CDC has logged over 15,000 suspected cases of the viral disease formerly known as monkeypox, which can cause fever, rashes, and extremely painful lesions. It's most often spread through close, intimate physical contact. Scientists say the new strain of Mpox is more lethal, with a fatality rate of around 5% in adults and double that in children. Jean Kaseya is director general of the Africa CDC.
This is not just an African issue. Mpox is a global threat, a menace that knows no boundaries, no race, no creed. It is a virus that exploits our vulnerabilities, preying on our weakest point.
In May, the Africa CDC said it was struggling to secure any of the millions of doses of Mpox vaccine it requested from pharmaceutical companies. The World Health Organization's meeting today to consider whether to declare a global public health emergency from Mpox. Here in the United States, at least 27 states are reporting very high levels of coronavirus in wastewater samples, with a four-fold increase since June 1st, driving a summer surge of COVID-19. The United Auto Workers Union has filed federal labor charges against former President Trump and billionaire Tesla CEO Elon Musk after the pair advocated for the illegal firing of striking workers. On Monday, Musk was heard laughing in agreement as Trump made these remarks during an audio live stream on Musk's social media site X, formerly known as Twitter.
Well, you're the greatest cutter. I mean, I look at what you do. You walk in and you just say, You want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say, that's okay, you're all gone.
The UAW reiterated in a statement that under federal law, workers cannot be fired for going on strike, and threatening to do so is illegal under the National Labor Relations Act. Meanwhile, the campaign reform group End Citizens United has filed a separate complaint with the Federal Election Commission, arguing Musk's softball interview with Trump amounted to an unlawful corporate contribution to Trump's presidential campaign. We'll have more on Elon Musk's embrace of Donald Trump after headlines. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz has made his first solo campaign appearance since he was tapped as the Democratic Party's vice presidential nominee. On Tuesday, Walz spoke to public sector union members at AFSCME's annual conference in Los Angeles, drawing a stark contrast between a future Harris administration and one led by Donald Trump and J.D. Vance.
The only thing those two guys knows about working people is how to work to take advantage of them. That's what they know about it. Every single chance they've gotten, they've waged war on workers, and their ability to collectively bargain to take that away from them. All we're asking for is better wages, better benefits, better lives, and dignity in the work that we do.
Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has fended off a primary election challenge after pro-Israel groups raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to bankroll her opponent's campaign. On Tuesday, Omar defeated former Minneapolis City Councilmember Don Samuels, capturing more than 56% of the vote in the Democratic primary. Omar has been a fierce critic of Israel's war on Gaza and for months has led calls for a ceasefire. Ahead of the primary, Congressmember Omar said in a statement, quote, "It is shameful that my opponent is actively courting Republican votes and desperately seeking funding from AIPAC," unquote. Omar's primary victory came after the powerful American-Israel Public Affairs Committee and its super PAC poured more than $25 million into defeating two black progressive Democrats of the squad, Congressmembers Cori Bush of Missouri and Jamal Bowman of New York. Voters in Arizona and Missouri will decide in November the fate of two ballot measures that would enshrine abortion access in their state constitutions. Missouri's amendment would reverse the state's near-total ban on abortions, which went into effect after the Supreme Court's ruling that gutted Roe v. Wade in 2022. Meanwhile, the Arizona measure would amend the state constitution to protect abortion rights up to 24 weeks of pregnancy. At least five other states, including Florida, Nevada, and South Dakota, will vote on similar measures this November. A warning to our audience, our next story contains disturbing footage and accounts of police violence. In Ohio, a grand jury's indicted a Franklin County police officer on murder and manslaughter charges after he fatally shot a pregnant black mother in a Kroger parking lot over a shoplifting accusation. Body camera video of the killing last August shows Officer Connor Grubb pulled his gun and fired a single shot through the windshield of a car being driven by 21-year-old Takaya Young, who posed no threat to the officers. Sean Walton is an attorney for Takaya Young's family.
The actions that led to the death of Takaya, the unnecessary aggression, the chilling commands that amounted to comply or die, were there for us all to witness in dreadful clarity. Takaya's life and that of her daughter were extinguished in an act of brutality, becoming yet another symbol of the urgent need for reform in police conduct and accountability.
Authorities have opened an investigation into an online harassment lawsuit brought by the Algerian Olympic boxing gold medalist Iman Khalif. She was targeted by a torrent of misogynist, racist, and sexist attacks over her gender eligibility to participate in the 2024 Paris Olympics. False claims and hate speech that Khalif was transgender or a man were posted online, including by tech billionaire Elon Musk and author J.K. Rowling, who are both named in Khalif's lawsuit. Though not named in the complaint, Khalif's lawyer said Donald Trump could also potentially be investigated over his social media remarks about the athlete. Most of the attacks came from X, formerly Twitter, which is owned by Elon Musk. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we look at how Elon Musk broke with the Democrats to support Donald Trump and is now spending tens of millions of dollars to help Trump get elected. Stay with us.
Thank you.
by Isaac Howell. From the Stop MVP compilation to Stop the Mountain Valley Pipeline. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Auto Workers has filed federal labor charges against Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump and billionaire Tesla CEO Elon Musk. The union accuses the men of illegally attempting to threaten and intimidate workers who go on strike. The UAW's complaint with the National Labor Relations Board comes in response to these comments made by Trump during a discussion with Musk Monday on the social media platform X, which Musk owns.
You're the greatest cutter. I mean, I look at what you do. You walk in and you just say, do you want to quit? They go on strike. I won't mention the name of the company, but they go on strike and you say, that's okay. You're all gone. You're all gone. So every one of you is gone. And you are the greatest. You would be very good. Oh, you would love it.
On Tuesday, UAW President Sean Fain spoke to CBS about why the union filed federal labor charges against Trump and Musk.
This is the problem in America right now. The rich keep getting richer at the expense of the working class. And people like Donald Trump and Elon Musk, they sneer at labor law, but they don't care about labor law because they don't care about working class people. You know, they believe in buying off the system and buying off politicians and being able to have their way with people. And, you know, look, employers need to be held accountable in this country when they break the law. It is a federal right of workers to go on strike, and they cannot be fired for that. But, you know, people like Donald Trump and Elon Musk, they laugh about firing people because they can care less about people and about their jobs and what they do to their careers. All they care about is the billionaire buddies and taking more wealth. And so this is a which side are you on election. And that's why working class people will vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, because they're one of us. And Donald Trump and Elon Musk represent everything that this nation stands against.
While the UAW has endorsed Kamala Harris, Elon Musk is funding a new political action committee to help elect Donald Trump. There have been reports Musk was planning to spend $45 million a month to help elect Trump, but Musk has disputed that figure. We're joined now in Boston by Wall Street Journal reporter Dana Mattioli. She recently co-wrote an article headlined Inside Elon Musk's Hands-On Push to Win 800,000 Voters for Trump. She's the author of the new book, The Everything War, Amazon's Ruthless Quest to Own the World and Remake Corporate Power. We're going to talk about that in a minute, but let's start with Elon Musk and your latest reporting, Dana. Before we talk about the UAW filing a complaint with the NLRB, let's talk about what Elon Musk's role is in Donald Trump's campaign for president.
It's really fascinating. As early as a few months ago, Elon Musk said he would not be contributing any money to either presidential candidate. And what we've seen is a complete 180. Not only did he start this super PAC with lots of money to help Donald Trump win, he is really taking on the get out the vote aspect of the Trump campaign. He also had a big endorsement for Donald Trump after the assassination attempt. So he's become like a very big political player this presidential cycle, in addition to running six companies that he's involved in. This is a person with a very big microphone. The Super PAC is looking to get 800,000 low propensity voters in swing states to the polls for Donald Trump. Elon also wants his workers in those states to register new voters to get them for the polls. But it's had a bit of disruption the last few weeks because he signed off on firing a lot of their vendors.
Firing the vendors, which, of course, firing was what Donald Trump was praising his ability to do in that conversation he had with Elon Musk on X. But talk more about why he broke with the Democrats and joined Donald Trump in his effort to become president.
Yeah, it's sort of this remarkable political transformation. You know, as of a few years ago, Musk has said that he exclusively voted for Democrats. He voted for Obama. He was pretty close to President Obama. And he voted for Democrats up and down the ticket. What has happened is during the Biden administration, there was a break between Elon and the Democrats. He felt like he was almost pushed out of his party. It related to Tesla primarily. You know, the Biden administration, because he has said he wants to be the most pro-union president in history, Biden is very reliant on the United Auto Workers Union. And the United Auto Workers Union does not love Tesla because Tesla's factories are not unionized. So whenever Biden held electric vehicle summits or would praise other companies for moving to the transition away from fossil fuels, Elon Musk and Tesla were not invited or name-checked. And this really grated on the billionaire because, you know, his company has the primarily the biggest market share in the EV space. So it felt like these personal slights. In addition to that, as Elon Musk's wealth grew, you know, he's the richest man in the world, the progressive wing of the party started villainizing him for wealth, for taxes, for, you know, income disparity in the country. And, you know, he started to move more to the right the last few years, culminating in this historic PAC that he helped form.
So can you talk about what Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and his staff, when he was running for president, has to do with the new super PAC that Elon Musk is behind but doesn't want to be seen as behind?
Yeah, so when Elon started this super PAC in April, he started meeting with vendors in Austin, Texas, and he told them that he wanted to create this red wave of voters. And he started relying on these Texas-based advisors for this. More recently, just a few weeks ago, he brought in some of the team from Ron DeSantis's failed presidential bid. These are people from the campaign, but also Ron DeSantis's super PAC. He brought them in, and then right after he brought them in, we saw the vendors change at Elon's super PAC called the America PAC. And that's caused really big disruptions because the people that were hired to knock on doors in all these swing states were fired. The people that were hired to maintain the super PAC's website, to get forms out to prospective voters who wanted to register to vote, were fired. So those forms never went out. And there were other disruptions along the way, 90 days before the election starts. And some of the political operatives we've spoken to on the Republican side have worried that because this is such a big part of the GOP's efforts on get out the vote, where you know, they think that the Democrats have historically been stronger, that this could cause some speed bumps along the way very close to the election.
So people who thought they were signing up to get ballots, they haven't gotten them?
Yeah, that's right. People that from swing states that put all of their information into the America PAC's website were supposed to be mailed documents that they could then sign and send to their elected officials to register. What happened is the America PAC fired the vendor that was mailing out those forms a few days before they were about to send them. So those had not been mailed out yet. There's 8,500 of them.
Can you talk about the two investigations into America PAC, Dana?
Yeah, so that very issue has raised some alarm bells at some of the swing states, and they were worried that the America PAC was just collecting voter information under the guise of registering them to vote. But the full picture is a little bit more complicated. Had the vendors been able to stay on, the 8,500 people who put in their personal information would have received those forms. But it was really because the new people, leadership of the PAC came in, and there was this disruption that last part of the cycle was not completed. Interestingly enough, the super PAC has had to rehire the vendor that it fired to complete that task.
How is Elon Musk hiding his name in the various PACs that he's supporting?
Yeah, what we've learned is really interesting. While Musk formed this PAC with a lot of his friends and cohort, he did not want to be the face of it, and he took pains to hide his involvement. You know, he has been on weekly one-hour phone calls with the vendors to get progress reports from them. He's very hands-on. He has asked them to show him the training materials for the door knockers. He's asked them to videotape what they say at the doors when they're knocking, right? So he's really keeping a very close look at how the progress of the PAC is. But he didn't want to be the face. So what he did was he assembled the PAC, and he assembled other donors to give checks of $500,000 or $1 million for the first quarter of expenses that appeared in, you know, July 15th federal campaign filings, with the intent of not donating himself the majority of the money for the PAC until July 1st or after, so that it wouldn't show up until the October 15th filings. What happened was we were able to get to the bottom of his involvement, and we reported these big stories about his involvement. And then there was a witch hunt within the PAC to see where the leaks came from. He was not very happy about that.
So if you can address, Dana Mattioli, what Elon Musk said about, well, you, the Wall Street Journal, denying that he's putting in $45 million a month. I think at the time it was 4 months, would be about $200 million into electing Donald Trump. He directly named the Wall Street Journal and saying it wasn't true.
He did. What we understand is he was really upset about the report coming out. Interestingly enough, before he denied it, he responded to someone on Twitter who said, who made the point that Elon went from voting for Obama to giving $180 million to Donald Trump, and that the Democrats must have screwed up pretty badly. And Elon confirmed that and said, yeah. And then after he started to deny the reports and walk back how much money he's giving, we have, you know, really stood by our reporting. He has told people around him that he would give around $45 million a month. You know, he obviously has the option to change his mind. Nothing's said and done until he writes those checks. But our understanding is at the outset of this, he told them that he would fund the majority of the costs that were associated with the PAC, and that he has said that he would give $45 million a month.
Mm-hmm. And how is this all legal?
You know, this is the world of super political action committees. You know, this happens on both sides, I should say. There are super PACs on the Democratic side as well. And it's a way for billionaires to really pool their resources in major ways that are not allowed if you're just giving individual contributions to campaigns. And this is how a lot of the, you know, the big money is funded when it gets to presidential elections.
And Trump, who has been attacking EVs, electric cars, for quite some time now, has flipped, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's definitely softened his stance since Elon has come out in full support of him. You know, Trump had been pretty critical of the EV sector. He's been known to be very close to big fossil fuel and the oil companies. And he's even come out and said that he has to be more supportive of electric vehicles because Elon has come out with such support of him. So that's like a really fascinating thing here as well. And they even spoke about it during the live stream, their differing opinions on fossil fuels, global warming, EVs. And, you know, there's definitely differing opinions there. But fascinating enough, even if you think about that, you know, Tesla, SpaceX, which Elon also owns and runs, these are both mission-based companies that would historically align more with Democratic causes.
I wanted to go back to the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. When Donald Trump called for UAW President Sean Fain to be fired.
United Auto Workers ought to be ashamed for allowing this to happen. And the leader of the United Auto Workers should be fired immediately. And every single auto worker, union and non-union, should be voting for Donald Trump, because we're going to bring back car manufacturing and we're going to bring it back fast.
So, Dana Mattioli, that was Donald Trump in his acceptance speech in Milwaukee, talking about Sean Fain, repeatedly saying his name, saying he should be fired. Now you have UAW President Sean Fain filing a labor relations complaint against Musk.